Okay, Rabosa. We started last week discussing Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer, and Rav Zevin has a whole chiddush here about Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer's Derech HaLimut, and how much, to what extent was Rav Issa Zalman influenced and impacted by his Rebbe Reb Chaim. And we'll see that in a certain sense, the fundamentals and the Derech HaLimud that Rav Issa Zalman got were from Reb Chaim, but then he was able to spread out and break new ground. He broke new ground in various ways. Number one, in terms of the way he understood Sugyas HaShas, he tried very hard to come up with a fundamental principle and then show how that fundamental principle would generate and reverberate many controversial issues throughout Shas. So on the one hand, just like Reb Chaim wrote his Sefer on the Rambam as a commentary on the Rambam, and very often Reb Chaim is interested in defending the Rambam from the Hasogas HaRavid, and at the same time to explain the Machlokas, the source of the Machlokas, the root of the Machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid, Reb Issa Zalman did the same, and he wrote 7 volumes on the Rambam. But what he did was, he would take a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid and try to show you how that machlokas repeats itself over and over again, each one going in his consistent shita. A second thing that's unique about Rav Issa Zalman, as we'll soon see, is that he had a very unique way of interpreting psukim. There were certain psukim in Tanakh that didn't make any sense, and the Mepharshim would rack their brains, try to come up with a pshat, and he, based on his understanding of Shas, would come up with a new interpretation of these psukim. So we're going to see in Mirtz Hashem that Rav Issa Zalman made a unique contribution. One of the points that Rav Zevin makes here in this wonderful magnum opus on Derech HaLimud called Ishim Veshitos is that Rav Issa Zalman was very, very much a student of Rav Chaim with regard to what he calls Din Klali and Din Mesuyam. And this brings us back to a discussion that we had, but we never really finished it, and I'm looking for an opportunity, of the universal halachas and the specific halachas. And Reb Chaim made a big deal about this. So what I want to show you before we get to see Reb Issa Zalman is how Reb Chaim developed this idea of Din Kloli and Din Mesuyam. And I think one of the most outstanding examples of this, which I'm surprised that Rav Zevin didn't mention this, is the Rambam in Hilchas Chametz Umatzah. And this is called Isas HaKlovin. Okay, so if you want to make a note of it, because again, I didn't get a chance to photocopy things, the machine was not behaving properly. Now supposedly it's fixed, I don't know. The Rambam, in 2 places, discusses Isas HaKlovin. In Perek Vav Milchus Chametz Umatz Halacha Lamed Hei, and is his Pirish HaMishnayis on Masech T'Psoch. And the Rambam establishes that the din of Isas HaKlovin, which means that you prepare the dough in such a way where it's very coarse, and they use different kinds of mursan, I guess you'd call it bran or the husks of the wheat, and it was dedicated or earmarked for the eating of animals, not for human consumption. The Rambam says that you're potur from the mitzvah of challah, and the Rambam says, therefore, you cannot use it as matzah. So I take this Isas HaKlovin, and I bake it as matzah. I cannot be yotzei the mitzvah of matzah. And Reb Chaim wants to say the following, that in order to understand the Rambam, what you have to do is you have to postulate that there are 2 dinim here. That's what Reb Chaim used to do. He would see 1 din and break it down into 2 dinim. 1 din he calls the Shem Lechem. What constitutes Lechem? And that's a universal issue, because it's relevant to Amotzi Lechem in Haaretz, in Hilchus, Brachas, and Kviyas Suda. It's relevant to Challah, because the Torah calls Challah Lechem Haaretz. It's relevant to Matzah, because the Torah calls Matzah Lechem Oni. That's a universal question that reverberates throughout Shas. What constitutes, qualifies as lecha? And then Reb Chaim says, in addition, there are unique laws that govern matzah, betoris matzah, not just because matzah is lechem, but because matzah is matzah. For example, in matzah we have two parshas. We have the parsha of lechem oni, and we have the parsha of tochlu matzahs. So above and beyond the universal requirements of shem lechem, Reb Chaim postulates that there are other additional requirements that are generated by the shem matzah as a unique shem matzah. So the Rambam says that there are two issues with regard to using Isas HaKlovim to bake matzah. One is the Shem Lechem. And that means that if Isas HaKlovim, because it was dedicated and earmarked for the animals, is not considered Lechem, for no, not for Challah or for any other dinim, therefore it's not Lechem as far as matzah is concerned. But then Reb Chaim is medayik from the Rambam that here in Hilchos Chametz Umatzah, with regard to Isas HaKlovim, the Rambam has a unique case where the Isa itself, let's say, is roi for achilas adam, but he decided to earmark it for the animals, for his dogs. And here too, the Rambam extends the din of Isas HaKlovim, which is mafkia shem lechem, and he says that you cannot use this isa for matzah, for the mitzvah of matzah. Says Reb Chaim the following: as far as the requirements universally of a shem lechem, this isa saklovim in this case, because of the makeup and the composition of the dough, would qualify as lechem. But in matzah, the Torah says u'shmartem es ha-matzahs. There's a separate tnai, a separate condition in mitzvahs matzah, that it's got to have shmira l'shem matzah. And without the shmira l'shem matzah, you're not yotzei the mitzvah of matzah, because the Torah says u'shmartem es ha-matzahs. Say nachinami. The Rambam has to go out of his way in Hilchos Chametz Umatzah to set up requirements of matzah with regard to Isas HaKlovim, and if you read it carefully, that does not equal, or it's not exactly, how do you say in English, to'em, it's not a mirror image of the requirements of lechem as far as challah is concerned. If it's not lechem as far as challah is concerned, then automatically, ipso facto, it cannot be lechem as far as matzah is concerned. But you may have a case, and that's what Reb Chaim wants to prove, of Isas HaKlovim, which has a shem lechem, it would qualify and generate a chiyuv of challah, but nevertheless, you can't use it for matzah. And that's what the Rambam adds in Pirush HaMishnayos, that if you don't have the proper shimur, then in Isas HaKlovim, even if the ingredients would be enough, that you have a rove or whatever it is of chita, of kemach, in such a way that it does qualify in universal terms as lechem, nevertheless, it would be invalid for what? For matzah, because matzah is an additional requirement that generates the shem matzah l'mitzvah, and that's what? Shimor b'diyuk, shmira. And therefore, since the Torah says u'shmartem es ha-matzahs, this Isas HaKlovim, although it has the shem lechem, is lacking in the shem shimor l'shem matzah, and therefore it's posel of matzah.
Would it be okay to use for the chalas of mincha?
As far as I know, yes. I don't know. I didn't learn Menachos. So, Rebbe learns one Masech, you don't ask him from a different Masech. So, yeah. I'm not learning Menachos. But as far as matzah is concerned, when the Torah says, Ushmartem, you could have something which is lechem as far as the universal qualifications, but yet it falls short of being matzah because the special requirement of Ushmartem is a matzah.
And it's similar to, we actually deep a few weeks ago about yayin for kiddush. It might be very pegafen on a regular basis, but for kiddush for Friday night, you need roi l'mizbeach.
Correct.
But
so if you have dvash,
you would take that further into dal kaisus. But I'm just saying, just
right.
At that level.
So if you have an admixture of dvash or what we call kanditon, then although it qualifies as yayin for all mitzvahs of yayin, and therefore you would make a bar priyag gofen, you could use fadalit kosos, it would be fine for a koshal bracha. But with regard to this specific halacha of kiddush, where the Gemara derives a hekesh between kiddush and nisuch hamayim and nisuch hayayin, excuse me, their kanditon is posel for kiddush according to Shita Saram. What else? Here's another example of a universal klal and a specifics. This is called birur. Birur means to clarify. You know what? In any court case, if somebody is suing someone else, is hamotzi mechavil raya, he's got to evoke proof. And in order to be motzi momen, what is the Torah's definition of birur? What is the standards less than which won't qualify? Don't all answer at once. What do you need to prove something? How many edim?
Two.
Minimum of two. Okay, al pishnayim edim yakum dov. Now, another example of birur would be a shtar. But once again, in order for the shtar in the hands of the malva to be proof against the lova, how many signatures would you require in the shtar? You'd require two witnesses, two chasimos. Okay. Now let's drop birur down one level. Because in Hilchas birur, it's not zero, it's not 100% or bust. There's something midway between 100% and zero. What's that called? Eid Echad. Eid Echad, the Torah says, is believed as far as what? A Chiyuv Shavua. No, I'm talking Dini Mamanis, right? We're learning practice of Mishpatim today. So in Dini Mamanis, we have Halacha of Eid Echad, come L'Shavua. Well, Maman ain't no come, but L'Shavua come. So Reb Chaim points out that if you take a look in Tosfos, in Masechta Bava Basra, in the Sugya of Shtaros, in Perikheskis Abatim, Tosis says that if the Malva produces a Shtar that has only one signature in it, it's worthless. There's something called Ksav Yodo, and there's something called a Shtar. A Shtar has two witnesses, and Ksav Yodo is written in the handwriting, what we call an IOU note, of the Lov himself, and the Malva is holding on to it. What happens if the Malva is holding on to a shtar that has only one signature? Tosfos says the shtar is not worth the paper it's written on. Frekter b'chayim, I don't understand. In Dine Birur, there's halach of Eid Echad, albeit not for the Birur of Hamotzi Mechavel of Araya, but at least for the Birur of being Machayev a Shvua. Why can't the Malva be Machayev the Lova to take a Shvua if the Malva is holding on to a shtar that has one Eid on it? And Reb Chaim used to say, from here you see that the dinim of shtar are different than the general universal halachas of birur. And even though in universal birur, Eid Echad is considered a birur, at least as far as Achiv Shvu is concerned, with regard to shtaros, there's a separate, unique set of rules and regulations, requirements of a shtar. And you need what's called Shnei Edim Lashvuye Shtara. Lashvuye Shtara means to make it into a shtar. The power of a shtar is such that even though the edim who are signed on the shtar, again we're going to get to our case where there's only one ed signed on the shtar, they did not necessarily see, witness the halva. That's a mission at the end of Bava Basra, right? Kosvin shtar lil lova afal pishein malva imo. It means that the lova commissions two edim to write a shtar, and the shtar says that I so and so, well actually the shtar is not going to say I, because that's ksav yoda, but it'll say that so and so, Reuven ben Shimon, borrowed 1,000 rubles from so and so, from Levi. And where's Levi? Ain't no emo, he's not there.
It's Eidus and Hadar spelled in.
Yeah, but there's no such thing as Eidus on Hadar spelled in. Hadar spelled in, we always say is Meshata Nibach. You know, we never take Hadar spelled in seriously unless it's Hadar B'fnei Shnei Eidim. And here, what does the Malva have? The Malva has nothing in his hand to prove his claim against the Lova. Ah, the Mishnah says that since the Lova had a shtar written, who's holding on to the shtar now? The Malva is holding on to the shtar. The Eidim didn't see the halva. They never even met the Lova. They don't even know what he looks like. They sign a shtar, which is what their signatures were authorized by the Lova. The Malva produces a shtar against the Lova, and Edom Aksumel Ashtar is considered like Edus in front of Bezdin, but how can the Edom testify? The Edom didn't even see the Matmos. So the testimony says that we, the other side, you know, testify that Shimon borrowed 1,000 rubles from Levi. But they didn't even see they didn't even witness the Halva. How does that work? The answer is that's called Shtar. How did the Malva get the Shtar? So the Lova gets up and he says, the Malva ripped the Shtar out of my hands. Or, I lost the shtar and the Malva found it in the street. The Malva says, you're full of hot air. You gave me the shtar. What are you telling me, Baba Mises? The shtar has its own power, its own life and authority in the laws of Choshen Mishpat. The shtar in the hands of the Malva is testimony against the Lova on everything that's written in the shtar, even if the Edom did not see that which is written in the shtar. That's the magic of a shtar. Reb Chaim used to say that tfisas bal hashtar, that the fact that the bal hashtar, in this case the Malva, is holding on to the shtar, that activates the shtar itself on anything that the shtar testifies on. But the question is, how do you create a shtar? And the answer is, says Tosis, you need two Edom signed on the shtar. If there are two Edom signed in the shtar, and we know that this is not a forgery, then we can assume that the Lova handed over the shtar to the Malva, and now the shtar testifies on everything that's written in the shtar on behalf of the Malva, and Hamotzi Mechavel Rai, we have the equivalent of two Edom. But if there's only one witness on the shtar, if there's only one Chasima signed on the shtar, that's not a shtar. And if it's not a shtar, it doesn't have any power whatsoever. So whereas in Hilchas Bir of Edom who testify in front of Beis Din, we have different gradations. And we tolerate not only two Edom, but to some extent, one Ed relative to the Shvuah. But with regard to shtar, the laws and regulations that govern the creation of a shtar require that the shtar be signed by two Edom. And if it's not signed by two Edom, it's not a shtar. I mean, again, it's like today, I don't want to compare it, but we have something called notary, right? Notarized. You need a document to be notarized. And if it's not notarized, again, I'm not going through every case, but in many cases and in many countries, legally, it's not binding. It has no significance to it because it wasn't notarized. For a shtar to be given the status of a shtar, what the Israelis call a gushpanka, it has the status of a shtar, you need two Edom. And even though one Ed would be enough to be mechayev a shvuah, but that's only b'edus bal peh, when the Ed is testifying in front of Beis Din. But if there's no Ed in front of Beis Din, then the Malva produces a shtar against the Lova, that's not a shtar. If it's not a shtar, it has no meaning and no significance in Hilchus Bir. David?
Why are the people who signed this, why are they called an aid, a witness? Why aren't they just called a person? I mean, they didn't witness anything.
Well, again, let's say the aid witnessed something, but we don't have him in front of Beis Din. Mm-hmm. So therefore, his aidus is aidus bal peh, which means he's not testifying in front of Beis Din. All he has is a shtar. Mm-hmm. So this aid may have witnessed exactly what it says in the shtar, but Tosa says since it's not a shtar, and the aid is not here to be made bal peh personally, therefore it falls in between the cracks. It's neither aid is bal peh, nor is it shtar, and therefore it's meaningless. And you and I would have said, well, why should it be meaningless? As far as the weight of evidence here, what's the difference between an aid who's testifying in front of Beis Din and an aid who's testifying through a shtar? If there were two aidim, we would give the same weight of power and authority to two aidim testifying in front of Beis Din and two aidim on a shtar. But the answer is that a shtar needs a status as a shtar. And halachically, according to the halacha, the legal system of halacha, it doesn't have the status of a shtar in all its power unless there are two Edom signed on the shtar. You see, you could explain this falabatish. And you could say that, you know what, if there was only one Ed written in the shtar, maybe the Lova is not going to be, he's not going to be so careful about the shtar. You know, he's not nervous. and therefore maybe he dropped it and the Malva found it. You could create all sorts of explanations. But according to Reb Chaim, and my Rebbe used to pound this into us, you could avoid all those psychological explanations. It doesn't mean that the Lova was less careful with the shtar, and therefore we suspect maybe the Malva stole the shtar, he found the shtar. It means that it's not a shtar. And there are many halachas and regulations that require writing a shtar. And here, my Rebbe used to add the following. There's an entire sugya in Masechet Gittin, which is called Get Mekushar. And what's a Get Mekushar? The document, in those days, was folded, and on each fold, there was a signature of an aid. And it has to have three signatures. Minimum of three. How could this be? The get is invalid if there are only two aidim on it? Because the takon of get mekushar? How did the Rabbanan operate with this? The answer is the Rabbanan created a regulation of lashvuye shtar. And as far as the get mekushar is concerned, you need three aidim lashvuye shtar. So it's unbelievable now. We're saying not only do we require two aidim, but in certain situations the shtar requires three aidim signed on it. And that again is a din misuyam in shtar. So if you're dealing with dine birur as a general universal concept, enochinami, one aid would be enough, and three aidim avad, for certainly. But in dine shtaris we have new regulations, b'torah shtar, and the law changes.
There's other fundamental differences. I mean, they ask, you know, the witnesses in the shtar are why they called aidim. And aidim in Bezdin, you can cross examine them. Aidim in the shtar, you can't cross examine. Right. There's other fundamental difference.
And they're considered as if you did cross examine them because of the Torah shtar. Yeah. The tokef, which means the chalashem and the halachic legal status of a shtar, is such that it's kami shenechkare dusam Bezdin. But that only applies when you have a shtar. If you have one aid that's signed on this document, that's not a shtar. And therefore, you don't say kamisha nechkara, and the lova doesn't even have to take a shvur to be machish the shtar, because there is no shtar.
If the two get aidim on a shtar, and one is pasul, is he pasul the other one?
For sure. That's called nimtzechemem karav pasul.
Yeah, but even the shtar is the same day as if...
Right, the Gemara Ksuvah says that the two aidim have to sign one in front of the other. And that's also part of the magic of a shtar, that we assume when there are two aidim signing the shtar that they came together and they testified one in front of the other. Now we have a sugya again in Cheskes HaBatim on Daf Lamed Gimel. I have some pages here, but I didn't get a chance to photocopy them because the machine is not working. So I'll just tell you what I have here. This is a photocopy of Rav Aaron Kahn's notes on Rav Salvechik Shirim on Cheskes HaBatim. Abby, were you there for Cheskes HaBatim?
Yeah.
Rav Aaron Kahn was a great note taker.
He sat in front of me.
We didn't even bother taking notes. You know, we became lazy after a while. I have many pages on Cheskes HaBatim, but I don't even know where to find them because I put them away. Begnisa. No, I'm exaggerating. But once Rav Aaron, you know, he would work on his notes and then rewrite them, and he would sit at the end of the week and rewrite the notes of the week, and we would photocopy his notes. He gave us permission to photocopy his notes. I don't know if he has to run for permission, but that's a different question. That was a sensitive issue. So I have here a couple of select pages that I took. That, you know, wherever I saw Din Mesuyam, I got excited about it. So one of them is here on page 225. That's a Din Mesuyam Shtar, the Lashvuye Shtare, Boy Shnei Eidim, you need two Eidim to make it into a Shtar. Okay. By the way, in this discussion here, this is just on the side, he has a Rabbeinu, he has a Rashbam and other Rishonim that claim that a Get Mekusha needs three Eidim Midoraisa. Not the way I said it, that's only Midorabban. Okay, that's on the side. But here, I have a whole section here of three pages, which I'm going to try to summarize. Pages 129 all the way to 131, and then he summarizes them again on 132. And this is the sugya that's called Ein Sofek Motzi Midei Vadai. Now, the sugya itself is called Kreve Derav Idi. And Rabbeinu Chananel has a different girsa than Tosfos. Tosfos quotes Rabbeinu Chananel. It's on Bavbasa Daf Lamed Gimel, if you want to make a note of it. And Tosfos touches on an issue, he doesn't explicitly address it. There's a controversy about who are the Yarshim, who can inherit a certain individual that died. And Rav Idi claims that he had the status of a Karov, and there were other people who came to claim the land, and he claimed they didn't have the status of a Karov. So Rabbeinu Chanana learns by removing the Girs of Karov Tfei, which indicates that it was crystal clear that Rav Idi was the closest kin, and therefore he had the rights of inheritance. He says that it wasn't totally clear exactly what the status of these other Balei Dinim were. And basically what Rabbeinu Chanana tries to develop here is that there is a universal principle called Ein Sofek Motzi Midei Vadai, which means that if these other so-called Yarshim were never able to prove and establish with witnesses that they were relatives, that they were Yarshim, then their status is that of a Sofek. Now, Rav Idi, on the other hand, certainly was a Yoresh. That was no question. If they were Yarshim, they deserve to get part of the Yerusha. Then we should divide it up. So one way of learning the sugya before Rabbeinu Chananel is that since Rav Idi is a Vade Yoresh, therefore the other so-called Yarshim, insofar as they haven't proven their status as Yarshim, they're Sofek Yarshim. And Ein Sofek Motzi Midei Vadai. They have no right to take the land out of the possession of Idi, insofar as Rav Idi is a definite Yoresh, and they are Sofek Yarshim. However, Rav Soloveitchik has a long discussion in which he proves that the principle of Ein Sofek Motzi Midei Vadai is only Sofek, meaning it's not the pshat that we don't have a Sofek. We do have a Sofek, but we weigh we balance, so to speak, the two sides, and one side has a more powerful claim than the other side, because he has a Vadai, the other one only has a Sofek. So therefore we don't know what to do. So we have a principle called Ein Sofek Motzi Midei Vadai. But Rav Soloveitchik proves that here, in this case, they awarded the character of Idi B'Toras Vadai. It wasn't a Sofek, meaning it wasn't that maybe Rav Idi does have the character, he doesn't have the character, we don't know, we can't establish, and therefore since he has a Vadai claim as a Yoresh, therefore let him leave well enough alone and let him have a chazaka. Because the Gemara assumes that even if the other claimants, is there such a word in English, claimants? Mm-hmm. Even if they would be tofes, if they would throw Rav Idi out of the character, or Rav Idi went on a long trip to China, they would take over and confiscate the character, they would be there for 3 years, they could still not claim ownership on the character. So Rav Soloveitchik asks the following question. If we're operating within the universal context of Ein Sofek Motzi Midei Vadai, okay, you can't be Motzi Midei Vadai, but if the Vadai is out, then he forfeits his Chazaka, not willingly, but in the Metzias, he doesn't have a Chazaka anymore, then let the other Sofek now establish his Chazaka. And now, we're not going to be Motzi because of Rav Idi's status as a Sofek. So again, let me just repeat the question. If we're operating here in this sugya according to Rabbeinu Chanan from the perspective of the universal principle of Ein Sofek Motzi Midei Vadai, that would make sense as long as Rav Idi is muchzak in the karka. We can't boot him out of the karka because Ein Sofek Motzi Midei Vadai establishes a sofek, and a sofek is never strong enough to remove from a chazaka. But what would happen if the tables were turned and down the line Rav Idi would lose his chazaka? At that point he Rav Idi becomes the motzi, he comes to Bezdin yelling and screaming that this karka is mine, why did they take over? They say we were Yarshim, we have rights to this karka. He says, but I have better rights than you do. Well, better rights than you do are only b'tar sofek, because Ein Sofek Motzi Midei Vadai is only a sofek. So Rav Soloveitchik wants to say that this halacha of Rabbi Nachmanel is a unique halacha in Yerusha. It's not a universal principle in Dini Mominos, in all of Choshen Mishpat, but rather in Hilchas Yerusha. You might argue everybody is a potential Yorish because we're all related somewhere down the line. But no, you have to have a status as a Yorish. The Rav called it a Chal Hashem Yorish. And unless you can establish that you are a direct Yorish, you may be an indirect Yorish because somehow we're all related, as I said before, then you don't have a Shem Yorish. Rav Eli established with proof and evidence beyond shadow of doubt that he was a Yoresh Yashir, he was a direct Yoresh. And therefore we know that he has established himself with the Shem Yoresh. Comes along the claimants, they come along and they say, well, we're also Yorshim. Well, if they can't prove that they are direct Yorshim, then they don't have a Shem Yoresh. And until you have a Shem Yoresh, you don't even have a claim to the karka. So it matters not who's muchzak on it, because now we're saying that a suffix is vada'i zero. Normally a suffix genders a suffix. But here in this case, since you don't claim, or you're not awarded a Shem Yoresh, therefore you have no claim whatsoever to this karka. Rav Eli on the other hand is a vada yorshim. There may have been other yorshim, but we don't know. In the absence of that knowledge that there are other yorshim, he remains the only yorshim. So I'll just read to you. The language here. He says, "The im hadi ein sofik motzim de vaday who din b'chol haTorah kula as yesh lomer dehu hora sofik." Okay, that's a whole discussion that he proved before. Hora sofik means we don't know what to do. So Besdin says ein sofik motzim de vaday. Let's leave it where it is. So, like for example, shnayim motzim v'talis. David, are you familiar with that Mishnah?
Very much.
So I can't prove that my claim is greater than yours because you're motzim and I'm a sofik. So until I establish b'vados that the talis is mine, you keep your half of the talis, I keep my half of the talis. That's called Ora Safek. I mean, Tosis goes as far as to say, forget about Ora Safek of Yachloku, why shouldn't we say Kol Yom Gavar, which is also Ora Safek. Let him be the Lord of the Jungle, whoever's... Here also we have, according to Rav Soloveitchik, that's what he proves here in this long shiur, that ain't something made to a devadi. He's also kind of hora sophic, like Shnayim Oksim Vitalis. He doesn't quote Shnayim Oksim Vitalis.
Isn't it similar to the Bori Vashem of Bori Adiv?
Correct, that Bori Vashem of Bori Adiv could be a special halacha. Most of the Rishonim say that Bari Vashem Bari Adiv means we don't know what to do. So if we don't know what to do, we have a Bari, leave it in the hands of the Bari. But many other Rishonim say no, that Bari Vashem Olav Bari Adif, that Bari Vashem Olav Shema Adif Lahotzi means that a Shema is not a Tain at all. And since he has a Tain as Bari, then there's no claim against it.
Is there a difference between Vada and Sofak and Bari and Shema?
La Halacha? Yeah.
What's it really?
No, I'm just saying, if we hold that Bari Vashem Olav Bari Adif is Sofak, meaning the Shema itself creates a Sofak in Bezdin, but the Bezdin gives Ora Sofak, we're going to leave it in the hands of the Bari. Then what happens if the Shema is Tofes and he grabs onto it, now he becomes a Muksok, and now Hamotzim Chel of Arayah. So it's very nice that you have a Titus Bari, but that Titus Bari is not supported by any evidence. But if we say no, ain't selfing motzim v'nevada, it means in this case that a taina shema doesn't register as a taina, it doesn't even generate a suffix, then we paskin in favor of the bari b'toris vada, and it doesn't matter one iota whether he's motzok or not. And that's what the Rav wants to say here, that in the case of Yerusha, we're not dealing with a ra suffix. Elazed din be Yerusha b'lvad. Okay, he doesn't say din mesuyam, I'm adding the word mesuyam, it's a special din. And that tells me that as far as the Yoresh is concerned, Rav Idi is a Vada Yoresh. And if he has a Vada status of a Yoresh, then no one could remove his status as a Yoresh unless they can prove and establish with evidence that they have a status as a Yoresh. Then he has a long discussion about Migu here. And he wants to claim that Migu Moel, in a case of Horas Bezdin, Migu creates some sort of Horas Suffolk. Okay, that's already beyond. Okay. What other example could we give? I want to give three very quick examples that occurred to my mind about Din Kloli and Din Mesuyam. None of these come from Reb Chaim. But I think Reb Chaim would agree with them, and I think the third one is from Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, his son. We have an Issa the Torah Lifnei Iver, which means I can't trip you up on an Issa Torah. On a Darbonin, it's a little more complicated, but let's say on an Issa Torah. So the Gemara has a sugya Maseth Avodah Zarah about selling trees to idol worshippers, and they use the trees for idol worship, and is a violation of Lifnei Iver. So the Nebuki Yosef has a chiddush in Maseth Avodah Zarah that if the goyim are trying to force you, okay, there's a difference between a goy and a Jew here, but I'm just going to blur that distinction so that we don't get too, it doesn't get too complicated for our purposes, because I'm just trying to convey the Derech HaLimud here. That you would have to give up your life rather than a bet, there's such a word, a bet in the crime, by selling or presenting these eitzim to the goyim for the purpose of Avodah Zarah, which is one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, you are somehow guilty of a crime that would obligate you to give up your life. In other words, you with me? They force you to present them with what's the word I'm looking for? To equip them with Avodah Zarah. You're not worshipping an idol, so we know that you have to give up your life for Avodah Zarah, but here you're not worshipping an idol. So in the worst case scenario, what are you violating by presenting them or equipping them with trees for Avodah Zarah? L'fnei iver lo sitei michshal, correct? Again, I'm assuming now that this L'fnei iver, even vis-a-vis a guy with regard to Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, that itself is an issue. But let's say you were giving it to a Jew or something like that. L'fnei iver is a lot in the Torah. We have a fundamental distinction, I think it's today's Daf Yomi, if I'm not mistaken, between Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. I'm sorry, excuse me, cross that out. Between the three cardinal sins of Gidurai, Shvichas, Tov, and Avodah Zarah, and Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. With regard to Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, the rule is not Yehoreg Val Yavar, but rather Yavar Val Yehoreg. So why should Lifnei Iver be any different? But that's all assuming that Lifnei Iver is some sort of a general prohibition that says that my responsibility towards another person is such that I should make sure that I don't facilitate or I don't abet in his violation. But there's another way of learning Lifnei Iver, as a din misuyam, which means that Lifnei Iver obligates me in every single case, in every single mitzvah unto itself. Not only am I enjoined from violating the Isur, but I'm not allowed to facilitate your violation of that Isur. And that's built into the Aveira itself. It becomes not a shame klali, but rather a shame misuyam. And therefore, according to this Shita, if you facilitate Avodah Zarah, that you abet in his Avodah Zarah, it becomes an Isur Avodah Zarah. It's not just a separate lav. This is what we call a Gili Milsa. It means that Lifnei Iver is a Gili Milsa, that on every lav, built into every Avera, there's a responsibility for me, in the Avera itself, not to trip you up or facilitate your violation of that Avera. If I do so, I violated that Avera. It's not just the Lifnei Iver. Lifnei Iver is telling me about each and every one. No, if it takes on the complexion of Avodah Zarah, David, then what happens? Yehoreg Val Yavar. You have to give up your life.
If this is applicable to every Avera, well, why wouldn't that be a Din Klali? And in every case, if the Jew is...
What I mean to say by a Din Klali is that there's a general Isur that has no specific complexion. The Isur is just that. Make sure, to the extent that you can, that no one else violates the Avera. But it doesn't enter in, it doesn't penetrate into the confines, into the boundaries of each specific Avera. Then it becomes a Din Prati. In other words, I just take... Here, let me give you the second example that I want. I think it'll become clearer. We have the case of Chatzi Shir Asa Min HaTorah. And the Gemara in Masech Yuma derives that from the Pasuk Kol Chelv, the extra kol. And Rabbi Yochanan says, Chatzi Shir Asa Min HaTorah means that if you eat half a kezayis of nevela, or half a kezayis of chalev, then you violated a Torah law. Once again, I have to understand, I have to analyze. Are we talking about a din klali or a din mesuyah? Is the Torah saying that in general don't violate any machalas asuros with the chatzi shir, and the chatzi shir has no particular or unique personality, so to speak? It doesn't have a shame of itself. It's just a general shame klali called chatzi shir. Or no. Or the chatzi shir takes on the complexion of that specific issa. The Torah is saying, don't eat chatzi shir of chelev, don't eat chatzi shir of nevela, don't eat chatzi shir of basa mechala. The nafkamina is going to be whether or not the chatzi shir asam and Torah takes on the chumrah, the severity of that particular issa. Or is it no? It's always the same. It's always the din klal. If it takes on the severity of that issa, for example, in the case of basa mechala, it becomes asam adna. Or, for example, in the case of chelev, it becomes an isur chomer because chelev is a chi of karis. So,
not,
for example,
not b'chatzi shir.
No, not b'chatzi shir. But again, what I'm saying is that the chatzi shir takes on the complexion of chelev. What's the nafkah mean? You have a chole. So the Ran in Masechta Yuma says in the last part of Yuma that what should you feed? What should you feed the chole? You have two options. You have a chatzi shir nevela or a chatzi shir of chelev. So what do you think he's going to say? Chatzi shir of nevela. Why? Because nevela, he says, is an isur kal, and chelev is an isur chamor. But Abby says very well, but he's only feeding him a chatzi shir of chelev. So he's not chayv kares. But the answer is that the kares is magala. It teaches us that the isur chelev and that lav is a very chomer dikar isur. It's an isur chomer. Nevela, in the worst case scenario, even if you eat a kzayis, you're not chayav karis. So the Ran seems to be setting up a hierarchy of isurim with regard to chatzi shir. That only makes sense if each chatzi shir is to be subsumed and given that that complexion, that character of that specific isur. And therefore it becomes a din misuya. I'll give you another example. Let's say a person takes upon himself a shvua or a neder not to eat chatzi shir. We have a principle that it's called in the Gemara's fancy language, it's called mushba biyomi mar sinai. I can't take a shvua on something that I took the shvua on at Har Sinai. But what did I take the shvua on Har Sinai? I took a shvua on a kezayis of nevela. Now he takes a shvua not to eat a chatzi zayis of nevela. So there's no mushba v'yomid. But that all again depends. If the iser of chatzi shir is built into every lav unto itself, so when the Torah prohibited me from eating nevela, included in that prohibition, in that shvua that I took at Har Sinai, is chatzi shir nevela. But if on the other hand, chatzi shir is only a general Isur, then it might not be mushba v'yomim Har Sinai. I mean, here you can vacillate back and forth.
Right. Right.
But if you wanted to say that it's a din mesuyam or an Isur mesuyam, then for sure it's mushba v'yomim Har Sinai, because then you apply the Gili Milsa. Correct, and it's subsumed under that specific Isur. The Rambam, at the end of Hilchas Sukkah, has an entire discussion about what he calls Simcha Shal Mitzvah. And he quotes the Pasuk, Tachas Lo'avaltem Shalakecha Misimcha Tuvlev, in the Tochacha. Now, I was wondering, just my own thoughts, when there's a principle called Avaltem Es Hashem Misimcha, right? If you know, we're guilty of Chas Shalom, we didn't serve Hashem Misimcha. So is that required of simcha, some sort of general halacha of simcha, that a person has to be b'asiyas ha-mitzvahs, he has to be b'simcha? So the added dimension of simcha when it exists is a kiyum klali of avodas Hashem b'simcha. Or do we say that no, that simcha is a chiyuv, it's a gili milsa, that it is built into every single mitzvah? And the Rambam wants to suggest that in mitzvahs lulav, there's a unique requirement of simcha. For example, we have principles like Zekelim Yamveh, or Chaviva Mitzvah Mishaita, or Zrizim Akdimim LeMitzvahs, all sorts of ways in which we enhance the mitzvah. Is that enhancement of the mitzvah a kiyum klali, a general fulfillment of Avas Hashem? or no, it enhances the nature of that specific mitzvah. It's built into that mitzvah. It becomes a din misuyam in that mitzvah. The mitzvah itself is impacted. So, for example, you know, my friend Dr. Allen always quotes Menachos. I'm not learning Menachos, but if I were learning Menachos, I would learn a famous sugya at the beginning of Perek Rabbi Yishmael called Chaviva Mitzvah V'Shaita. And the Gemara spells too in Pesachim that with regard to Korban Pesach, there's a din of Chaviva Mitzvah V'Shaita. Now, watch what happens over here. If, let's say, a certain Korban overlaps with Shabbos, and the Torah says that the mitzvah of the Korban is Docha Shabbos. Fine. You have to do the four avodos on Shabbos, and I understand that very well. But there's also a kiyum called Hekter Chalovim Veivarim. And the unique dimension of Hekter Veivarim Chalovim is that you can fulfill it Belila. It's the only, you know, they say the Beis Hamikdash is closed for business at night. But there's only one business that goes on at night, and that's Hekter Chalovim Veivarim. In fact, according to one day, that's what Tefillas Arvis is all about. Is can I get Hekter Chalav Veivarim? So now, what do we do with the Hekter Chalav? There's certain parts of the Eivarim that have to be burnt on the Mizbeach, which is a violation of Shabbos. Do we do it on Shabbos, or do we do it on Motzei Shabbos? And the halacha is that there's no difference between doing it on Shabbos, doing it after Shabbos. There's no reason why you have to, there's no compelling reason to do it on Shabbos. So if I'm violating the Shabbos, overriding the Shabbos for the sake of Hekter Chalovim, I might as well wait till after Shabbos. Gemara says, nay, Chaviva Mitzvah V'Shaita. Yibor Hashem, Chaviva Mitzvah V'Shaita, it's a very nice thing, you know, to show, you demonstrate your love for Hashem, you do His mitzvahs, you dedicate, you do it the first opportune moment. But why should that be Docha Shabbos? The answer is, because that's part of the Kiyum Karma. It's not a din klali that I show my chavivas for a mitzvah. It becomes built into the mitzvah itself, at least with regard to kachin in karbanos. I don't know if that's unique. You know, that might be the exception to the rule rather than the rule. In fact, the whole Rambam about mitzvah min amuvchar, that you should buy something that's the best, is derived from which parasha in the Torah?
Esrog.
No, which parasha in the Torah? Going back way before Esrog.
Sure.
Even before the Torah was given.
Before the Torah was given?
Yeah, in Parshas Bereishis. I'll give you a hint, Kain. Oh, if I say Kain. Hevel, excellent. I mentioned Kain to try to trip you up, but the real answer is Hevel. Because Hashem accepted the carbon of Hevel. He was not excited, the Ribbono Shel Olam was not excited about the carbon of Kain, because Hevel, it says, brought me b'chor, what's it called?
Mufkar.
Mufkar, yeah, whatever the pasuk says. So he brought the best. And the Rambam builds a whole theory on this. I think it's the last Rambam in Me'ilah, if I remember correctly. Yeah. And the Rambam says that a person, when he spends money on a mitzvah, he should make sure to get the muvchar, you know, the best. And the Rambam derives from this parsha of Karbonos. It seems the Rambam is learning that the halacha min ha-muvchar is not halacha of Karbonos. It's a general halacha in all mitzvahs HaTorah. So, for example, if I can buy two esrogim, and this reminds me of the... Do you remember the test of Reb Chaim? That Reb Chaim tested his farm? John, you remember the details?
No.
There are two esrogim, right? One esrog was a Vadei Mufkar. It was a beautiful esrog. But it was a suffix whether it was a Murkav or not. The other esrog was a Vadei Kosher. It was definitely an esrog, but it was the bottom of the barrel. You know, there was no element of Hidu. So Reb Chaim says, I have these two esrogim on the table. Which one should I take first? This is how he used to sharpen his talmid. So what did talmid jump and say? Take the one that's a vade kosher, right? Because at least you'll definitely be yotze the mitzvah. So Reb Chaim says, nay, take the one that's a suffix. And on the side that it's an esrog, you'll be yotze the mitzvah, zeh keli v'admeil. And then you'll take the vade esrog second. But if you switch around the order and you take the vade kosher, then you already yotze on your mitzvah, you can't be yotze the mitzvah, zeh keli v'admeil. Yeah, that's what Reb Chaim. I wanted to give you another example from Masechta Shabbos. This is what we're learning now, Masechta Shabbos. Reb Kivager has in a tshuva a discussion about the law of mumar. The halacha is that Machal Shabbos Farhesia is a mumar l'kol haTorah kulah. So Rabbi Kivega wants to know, what's the din of a mumar lechil Shabbos under the Rabbanan level? He doesn't violate the Doraisas, he only violates the Rabbanan. Is he a mumar lechol Torah kula or is he not? And I think that Rabbi Kivega's vacillation is safek depends upon din klali or din mesuyim. Can anybody help me here? I'm quizzing you, Rabbi Chaim. If a Darabbanan is a din klali, the Torah says lo tasu mikol asher yerucha. What makes you into a mumar? Who says that lo tasu generates mumars?
Depends on the machlokes Rambam and Ramban in lo tasu, doesn't it? But that's it makes it a deraiser or not. Can't remember who said it.
Yeah, no, the Rambam says that you violate lo tasu, but what was the Ramban hold? I remember the Ramban's kasha about something of this. So the Ramban holds. I don't know what the Ramban holds. The Ramban holds that it's not Lotosar. I don't know. It's hard for me to believe that, but maybe. In any event, so let's go with the Rambam. So the Rambam holds that every violation of the Rabbanon, again, if you do it rebelliously, is a violation of the law of Lotosar. The Rambam says, Echad Zivon, where do the Rabbanon have the authority to prohibit us in X, Y, or Z? The answer is Lotosar. No, for Lotosar, I don't get a din of a mumar. Again, you know, you've got to tar and feather the person if he rebels against the Chachamim, but I wouldn't call him a mumar, I'll call it Tarkula. So why does Rabbi Kivega think that if he violates a Rabbanon on Shabbos, he has the din of a mumar mid Rabbanon? Because it's not a din klali, but rather Lotosar is a din in every single mitzvah unto itself. That the Chachamim have the power and the authority to extend a mitzvah. And in the case of Shabbos, they're extending Shabbos. This is what's called a Malacha Derabbanan. And therefore, so far as they violate a Malacha Derabbanan, Rabbi Kivega thinks that Derabbanan, they become a Mumar, L'kol HaTorah Kula. That's called a Din Mesuya. We have another example in Hilchah Shabbos. The Mishnah says in Perek HaBoneh, the 12th Perek, it says, Zeh HaKlal, Kol Shemalachto Miskayemes B'Shabbos Chayev. In other words, if you have a Malacha Miskayemes, then you're Chayev. So the Magid Mishnah claims that although the Mishnah itself is explicitly referring to Malachas Boneh, that you need what's called a binyan shel kayama, the Magid Mishnah says no. This principle applies in all 39 malachas. And he says that if, for example, leave the case of Oel Aroi, but let's say for Malachas Binyan, let's say the case of Tzvia. The Rambam there in Perek Ches says that if you paint something in a way that it's enomis kayemis, that you use certain materials and it won't be long lasting, the Rambam says that you're potter. And then we have the case of kesher, when a person ties a knot, and if it's not a kesher shel kayama, he's potter. So the Magid Mishnah says that what happens according to Magid Mishnah is that this Mishnah, Zeh HaKlal, Kol Shemalachto Miskayemes, although it's referring explicitly to one malach, namely to boneh, nevertheless, it indicates a din klali in all of Shabbos, in all malachas of Shabbos, that you need a malacha miskayemes. Now, if that be the case, then, I'm just guessing that according to the Magid Mishnah, this halacha of miskayemes, which applies to all 39 malachas, is another case of what principle, Rabbi Osai? Hoping you'll remember this, because we've been learning a lot of Shabbos this year. Called Maleches Machsheves Asrit Torah, which means that the Torah raises the standards of a malacha. What constitutes a malacha in Shabbos? You can have many cases, like for example, Malach Shen Tzricha Leguf according to Reb Shimon is part of because of Maleches Machsheves, that doesn't apply elsewhere in Kol Torah Kula. That's a Din Mesuya. And now the halacha of Miskayemes becomes a Din Mesuya according to the Magid Mishnah, because every malacha by definition requires Miskayemes. So, for example, if you look, the Torah says, "Parshas Ki Teitzei, v'chi yichtov la, v'kasav la sefer kris." So, there's halach of ksiva in get. What would be if you wrote a get on an ola shel zayis, on a leaf? A leaf has no permanence to it; it's going to disintegrate with time. So, on Shabbos, says the Magid Mishnah, you're potter. No, I mean that the Rambam says explicitly, but the Magnish says why are you potter? Because since it won't last, this ksiva, it's lacking in melacha miskayemis. It's not a melachas makshevis. What would I anticipate then in the case of get? Should we apply the same rule in get?
No,
because there's no requirement of melachas makshevis in get. In fact, the Rambam Perek Dal Bilchus Gerushin says that if he wrote a get on an Olah Shel Zayis and he gave the get to his wife, she's megureshes. Could be that tomorrow, I don't know how long it take till tomorrow, but it'll disintegrate into thin air and you won't be able to read the get. It doesn't matter, because at the moment of Gerushin there was a mekasav. Aye, there's no ksiva unless it's Torah Miskayim. That's only in Shabbos. They require Malacha Miskayim. Yeah, go ahead, David.
How do you establish Miskayim, well, let's say, with carrying? How does carrying be enforced by permanency or non-permanency?
Well, I think the halacha is that you require what's called a makam dalet al dalet. So you can't just put something down in Rishus HaRabim on the spitz of a water hydrant. You know, that's what they used to tell us. If you ever by mistake find out there's no air, then no, I'm carrying something, put it down on a water hydrant. You know, it comes through like a little bit of a spitz. A fire hydrant, I meant to say. I said a water hydrant. Yeah, that's called a makom ptur. Why? Because it doesn't have dalet al dalet. You need a place that's steady, that's secure. But the more classical cases of Malacha Miskayemis are with regard, and this is very relevant today in contemporary life with regard to ksiva. I think I told you once that in Shari Tzedek Hospital, where they have to write down certain facts on Shabbos, you know, they have, let's say they take certain tests and then they have to decide on medical procedure based on the results of those tests. So how do they? Again, things have changed since that time, but in the old days at least, what they did was they wrote it a ksiva she'ena miskayemis, and that reduces it from a doraisa down to a derabbanan. Why? Because on a doraisa level, you need a malacha miskayemis. Or, for example, kesha. So the Rambam has a case where they needed to tie something for the sake of a mitzvah. I don't know, they had to post some instructions, and they needed, so the Rambam writes, it's a kesher sheina shel kayoma, and therefore on a deraisa level, he's not chayif melechas kosher, and on a rabbanan level, the makom mitzvah, they allow. Again, you have to know all the details. We're studying that actually in this room on, I think it's Tuesdays and Thursdays, we're studying. Oh. There's a brisker rav in Stencil regarding Avodas Yom HaKippurim. The halacha in the Avodah of the Ketores, Lifnai V'Lifnim, was that the Kohen Gadol was required to remain in the Kodesh Kadoshim. He wasn't allowed to exit until HaKtores, which required Male Oshan, when the smoke goes all the way up. And the Brisker Rav wants to know, does that mean that with regard to all the avodos that require a Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, there's a halacha that he has to wait until the completion of the malacha, that final clincher of the malacha. He wants to know whether Achiyale Malo Oshan is a general requirement in Kohen Gadol, Shehiyas Kohen Gadol. And that means it's a din klali that reflects on all the kachim, all the avodas that he's required to do on Yom Kippur, or is it a special halacha in the Ketores? My Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik was wondering about shlichus. The Torah in the parsha of Get says v'nosan lo sefer krisus, and the Gemara says that there's a ribuy in the pasuk to include even a shliach ha'isha, that's called shliach lekabolas haget. So Rav Soloveitchik says it's very strange. The Rambam Perek Hei Milchus Gerushin spells out the ability of a woman to appoint a shliach haget. Why does the Rambam feel compelled? The Rambam has a whole section in the Yad HaChazaka called Hilchos Shluchim, with all the requirements of shlichus. And a woman could also make a shlich. So why did Ram have to say? So Rav Soloveitchik wanted to claim that the shlichus of Kol HaTor Kula, if not for the special ribui, would not operate by get. Get requires a unique shlichus. That's not the universal shlichus. The universal shlichus means that you are my shliach, you're my proxy for everything that's relevant to the impact, to the effect, to the chal Hashem. But in the case of get, that's not sufficient, because the Torah says v'nasan biyada sefer krisis. You need the yad ha'isha. And if you read the Rambam carefully, the Rambam says o yada, o shlucha shehu ki yada. The Rambam adds three words over here: shlucha shehu ki yada. So if Salvation says, why did the Rambam feel compelled to add those three words? Because here in get, it's not enough to fall back and activate the universal shlichus, where you operate on my behalf, but you need a shlichus of yado ki yado, that the shliach becomes the extension of the yad of the isha.
That means it becomes a get. The Kabbalah becomes a get before it even reaches her hand, because he was already the Kabbalah.
Correct. And the very moment that it reaches the hand of the shliach, she's megureshes. And not only that, the Rambam seems to hold that you need two edim, what's called edus lekiyum adover, in order for her to appoint the shliach. The Rambam in Shliach Lo'olacha, I mean the Shliach of the Baal, he doesn't require two Eidim le'kiyum adavar in order to establish the mini Shlichus. If the Shliach is holding on to the get, then we believe that he got the get from the Baal. He doesn't have to produce two Eidim. But in the case of Shliach le'kabbalah as opposed to Shliach Lo'olacha, the woman needs two Eidim to test, or the Shliach needs two Eidim to testify that he was appointed by her, by this Isha, as a Shliach le'kabbalah. Why? So Rav Salvechik would claim that since this shlichus is a unique shlichus, in the general shlichus, like shliach havala, lochas haget, the shliach is just functioning in order to create a gerushin. He's a proxy. But in the case of shliach laisha, what the yad, the mashi, through the mina has to convert, transform the yad ha-shliach into the yad ha-isha, that's already a davar shebe'erva. That's already changing the rules of the game. We're not dealing with universal principles of shlichus, but rather with the universe, with the special shlichus of get. That requires two edim l'kiyum hadavar. Okay, so what at least we could do now, I mean, again, there's a lot more here, but I want to share with you the insights of Rav Zevin with regard to the Eben HaOzel that was authored by Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer. So again, I wasn't able to photocopy this, but if you make a note of it, pages 349 to 351, he says something amazing about Rav Issa Zalman. And he says that Rav Issa Zalman picked up something from Reb Chaim which is mind-boggling. And that is that he would disagree with the Gedolei Achronim without even mentioning them. That this was a particular character of Reb Chaim. I found it very much in my Rebbe, Rav Salvechik, that you could skip over generations of Gedolei Torah because you have an original insight and you believe that you have proofs to derive your conclusion. So he gives an example here, Rav Zevin, of the halacha called Gonev Min HaGanav. The Gemara in Bava Kama derives from a pasuk that Gonev Min HaGanav is Potter. And the Gedolei Achronim, the Ktzos and the Nesivos, they all understood that Gonev Min HaGanav, not only is he potter from Kefel, but he's even potter from Keren. The Eino Mishalem Tashlume Kefel, the Eino Mishalem Gam Keren. That the mitzvah of the Hoshiv, even vis-a-vis the Keren, forget about Shalom Yisham Shnayim, doesn't apply to a Gonev Min HaGanav. And without even mentioning the Gedolei Achronim, but Rav Zalman Meltzer, in his analysis of the din of Gonev Min HaGanav, he tells you to find it in Hilchos Geneva, Perek Aleph, Halacha Yudalid, in the Eben HaOzel, writes that no, that Gonev Min HaGanav is only a patur as far as Kefil is concerned. But as far as Keren is concerned, then certainly he's Chayav Keren. Again, that's just to give you an example. Again, there's a whole discussion here in the Rav Zalman, where he disagrees with the Gedolei Achronim. He says the following. The Rambam writes in Perek Aleph Mehilchos Gzela, before we were talking about Gneva, that with regard to Hashavas HaAveda, Behema Shebarcha Min Adir, if the Behema jumped out of the corral, and somebody comes along with Zero Lemakomi, brings it back to the corral, Hareza Kie Mitzvahs Hashavas HaAveda, the Ein Tzarech Dasbail. He doesn't have to knock on the door of the owner and tell him, listen, buddy, I'm returning your animal to you. There's no requirement in Hashavas HaAveda of Das Bailam. He just puts it back where he knows it belongs, from whence it got lost. So the Evan Ozel proves that the Rambam is repeating himself in what he wrote in a previous halacha. And he asks, what's the chiddush of the Rambam? The Rambam is very stingy on ink. He doesn't just repeat himself. So he says the following. The Rambam is talking about a case of barcha. Barcha min adir. How did that happen? How did the animal get loose? Oh. So, ketzad barcha. He says, there are two possibilities. Just one second, I'm just trying to find the place. Oh. One possibility is Shavra Esadelis, that she broke down the door that was confining her, and she went lost. She went AWOL. Okay. He says the following, that normally when we talk about Hashava or Hachzara, we require what's called a Makom HaMishtamer. The Rambam seems to indicate that the Meshiv Esaveda returned the lost object to the same deer, the same corral, with that was broken open by the animal. It's a chatzah shein mishtameres. So then let's offer another possibility, that she didn't break down the door of the corral, but she did something very unusual. Either she climbed up over the fence and somehow jumped the fence, or maybe she burrowed a hole under the ground. V'yicholnu lachshov l'gabi behema zu kvar ein zu shmira. The Ram wants to tell me gavaldik achidish in the case of barcha. How could you say that the shomer fulfilled his mitzvah, the primary mitzvah of a shomer, I'm sorry, of a motzi, of Hashavas HaAveda, is that he takes on the status of a shomer? Right, that's called the Shomer Aveda. Shomer Aveda, if he returns it to the corral, he knows very well that as far as this animal is concerned, that's not a real Shmira. Because the animal has already proven itself or herself that she can get out of this confinement. So Rambam wants to be Mechadesh, that Mikol Makom, nevertheless, Machzira, V'kiyem Es HaMitzvah. But then Rabbi Zalman says, if this is true, the animal has proven itself not to be confined by this wall, then why is it, how does the Rambam know that this is in fact a kiyum of Shmira on behalf of the Shomer HaAveda? So he quotes a Tosefta in Bava Metzia. It says, Mishtameres Hashta. Okay, I guess we'll stop here. I'll make a note of it. Anyway, the chiddush here is that Rabbi Zalman not only analyzed the Rambam to tell you chiddush, but he comes up with a makar that nobody knew about. Nobody knew it existed. And he's interpreting it according to the Rambam. Okay, we'll try to give that example tomorrow.